Now, the U.S. and Russia have reached a consensus on the way to reinstate a ceasefire deal in Syria and revive peace talks over the country's years-long conflict.
Today, I can say that we achieved clarity on the path forward. We have completed the vast majority of those technical discussions, which were primarily focused on making this cessation real and improving the level of humanitarian assistance, and thereby getting the parties to the table so we can have a serious negotiation about how to end this war.
If the remaining details... Now, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry made the comments at a joint press conference alongside his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov in Geneva, where the top diplomats discussed Syria's conflict. Kerry held the negotiations as, quote, fair and productive. He described as ultimate goal of the U.S.-Russia talks, bringing back Syria's warring sides to the negotiating table to discuss a political transition. And he stressed that Syria's conflict wouldn't end without a political solution. At the presser, Lavrov also said the U.S. and Russian teams had achieved principal agreements on a stable truce and improvement of humanitarian situation in the war-ravaged country.
Just as John said, we've made a very step forward compared to our progress in Moscow, and the fact that we're not distributing any documents today does not mean that we have not found a pathway to find a way forward with some of the principal agreements and arrangements that we achieved in Moscow, and that is achieving a stable ceasefire and gain access for humanitarian deliveries to areas that are in need of such aid. And we're not talking about Aleppo alone in this regard.
Now, without naming any countries, Lavrov slammed some governments for illegally intervening in Syria and emboldening terrorists by undermining the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. They called Iran and Russia only countries legally assisting Syrians inside the country. Lavrov further stressed the necessity of separating al-Nusra Front terrorists from U.S.-backed militants who control parts of northwest Syria. Now, Friday's meeting came a month after two top diplomats met in Moscow and agreed on a number of unspecified actions to resuscitate the truce. Now, for more on the story, we're joined by Mr. Jim W. Dean out of Atlanta in the States. He's a managing editor and columnist at Veterans Today. Hello, Mr. Dean. Nice to have you back on Press TV's Top 5. Now, Mr. Dean, why do you think Washington has now sat down finally with Moscow to work toward a lasting solution in Syria? If you notice, many of the U.S.'s Mideast allies who were heavily invested in this war through proxy or whatnot were nowhere in the picture. Your thoughts?
Well, that's exactly right. But actually, they have been talking, and in the background, they have had set this date to try to have an agreement between them by the end of August. And we were getting a little worried here, cutting it thin. Plus, we've had these tremendous changes in the war. We had the Syrian army very successful moves in isolating Aleppo. And then within a week to 2 weeks, we had the huge major counterattack by the rebels and the jihadis. And then a week or 2 weeks after that, we had the tremendous joint bombing campaign with the Syrian Air Force and the Russians, including bringing their Tupolev bombers in based from Iran. And I was just amazed that while all of this roller coaster ride on the battlefield was going on, that Lavrov and Kerry kept the talks going. So this came as a surprise to me, but the biggest clue that I read in the initial statement is Lavrov saying that we've now decided to go ahead with the two groups, Russia with a government, meaning Syria, and the opposition groups that are working with them, and the U.S. and the opposition groups that are working with them. And what he did not say, which he didn't have to, is anybody that's not included in those groups, you are out of the picture. You don't have a seat at the table. You're not going to have the microphone. You can't put anything. You can't make any demands whatsoever. So they're now in a risky situation if they try to obstruct whatever agreement is made on the battlefield. The inherent thing here is they said that they could find themselves as targets because you are not in the group and you will not be in the ceasefire. So I was very impressed in that very coded language that they said, you're either with us or you're against us, as we say here in the South.
Right. And Mr. Dedan, we haven't seen these two powers or superpowers, you might call them, come together much over anything or agree on much of anything as of late. Now that we have both of them come together on the Syria crisis, we seem spearheading this campaign. How sure can we be that this will be effective and this cooperation could be fruitful? Because on the U.S.'s side, there's some regional countries. I mean, when the U.S. is stepping up to the negotiating table, is it really speaking for all the Mideast regional allies that it has?
Well, obviously, there's have to have been some back channel communications going on with them. But of all of them now, Turkey is the big dice roll here because they're now inside the country. They've effectively declared that they're going to set up a buffer zone, which will obviously be a no-fly zone also. And the U.S. has been involved in this. So we're seeing some unbelievable negotiations here. On one hand, they're working on an arrangement to make peace. But on the other hand, Turkey's going in with a U.S. coalition, and they're putting their buffer zone, which they had not let Turkey do, as part of this deal. I'm beginning to wonder whether this may have been part of the agreement to get everybody to go along with the deal, with yes, we'll let you come in, you'll come over the border, and you will have a stake in it. And the people that are the big losers here are the Kurds, because they've now been told that there's no chance that they're going to get an independent, autonomous state. Syria is not going to be carved up just to give northern Syria to the Kurds.
And, sir, why do you think there's this sudden sense of urgency now for these two world powers to come together and try to hash this thing out? People have been dying for the last 5 years. The country's been getting annihilated for the past 5 years. There's been, you know, foreign mercenaries pouring into the country, thousands by the day over the last 5 years. Yet now you see the U.S. and you see Washington and Moscow with this total sense of urgency. What's the significance and the timing of this now?
Well, it's called the Obama administration is coming to an end. And Lavrov knows they're tired of this. They don't know what's going to happen. They don't know who's going to get elected, what their policies are going to be. So both of them don't want to deal with all additional variables with who the next president is going to be. Obama has a lot invested in this peace process. He wants to have a successful negotiation on his report card for president. So it's a good time for the Russians, for everybody. But the main thing we have to worry about here is, what is Turkey going to do? Is Turkey going to try to exploit this thing and hold everybody hostage, that if you don't give me everything I want, I'm going to blow the deal up? Because Erdogan knows that they want this deal really bad. So we're really on tender hooks here to see how this is going to come together. And once they announce an agreement, is it going to be like it has been in the past? Within a couple of weeks, everybody will just start fighting again.
Thank you, Mr. Jim W. Dean, for your input, sir. Mr. Jim W. Dean joining us out of Atlanta, managing editor and columnist at Veterans Today.